It's time for season two of the Remoter Podcast. I'm your host, Josephine. As a continuation from season one with Alex and Andreas, I had the opportunity to interview some remote work leaders, ranging from companies, consultants, advocates, and more, to add to Remoter's stash of free resources and human-centered stories, enriching our educational platform about remote work. This podcast is sponsored by Tori, a new kind of professional network that automatically connects talent with opportunity. Founded by Alexander Torrenegra, our goal is to make work fulfilling for everyone. Find the job of your dreams by visiting tori.co. That's T-O-R-R-E.co. When I finished my interview with Tyke, I left the office thinking, James really knows his stuff. Even though Tyke hasn't been around for decades or anything, it's clear to me that managing a globally distributed team across all time zones would just expedite somebody's growth. James's story and path down remote starts a lot like Tori's CEO, Alexander Torrenegra. They both built their businesses remote out of necessity. So yeah, tune in for a story about perseverance and trust, as well as self-awareness on improvements that can be made. Welcome to another episode of the Remoter Podcast. I'm Josephine, and I'm currently in East London with my guest today, James Hirst, COO of Tyke. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for inviting me on the podcast.
No problem. Thank you for participating in the Remoter Project. I want to get started with a little introduction from you.
Myself. So I am co-founder of Tyke. I'm a father of three kids. I live just down the road in East London and have done since I was a teenager. And I've been in small businesses in tech since I dropped out of university.
Where did you go for a little bit?
University College London, and delighted my parents after 3 months when I realized I really didn't want to get into being a lawyer or a barrister. So dropped out, became a barman, and eventually found myself doing tech support for dial-up modems back in the day of connecting your computer to the internet through a phone line. Did that for a while and joined a series of startups and eventually digital consultancies and now Tyke.
Nice. Could you tell me a little bit about Tyke itself?
Okay. So Tyke is an API management platform. What that means is we have an open source gateway. Anyone can grab online. You can go to GitHub, you can go to Package Cloud, you can pull it down as an Amazon AMI. And that sits in front of large organizations or small, sits in front of their APIs and proxies the traffic, protects it, secures it, measures it. And on top of that, we have a proprietary piece of software, which is where the business comes in. And that allows people to manage the gateway more easily and at scale.
I'm curious, what got you guys started into this project?
So I met my co-founder 10, 12 years ago. We actually joined the same digital consultancy on the same day and ended up working together for a couple of years doing big digital transformation projects, people like the United Nations and the National Health Service and so on. And my co-founder, Martin, is an inveterate hacker. He loves to build and test and learn. One of his side projects at the time was a load testing business. He wanted to see if he could compete with the big boys and build a side business. And it failed. He realized to actually get an advantage, he needed to use the latest tech. And that meant building something that was microservice-based, was built on containers, was multi-cloud first. And there was no technology to allow him to do that. So he built his own API gateway and his own API management platform to do it. The load testing business ran for about a year as a side project, but didn't really go anywhere. So he shuttered the business. And he open-sourced the code he'd written for the APIs, thinking, well, you know, I learned something there and others will benefit from it. And over the next year or so, it really picked up momentum. A lot of organizations started using it to the point that really big Fortune 100 companies in the US were getting in touch saying, what's your enterprise pricing? How can I get consultancy on this? Can you do the installs? And he had to admit at that time, well, it's just me. It's a weekend hobby. But that obviously indicated, okay, there's a potential
interest
here.
Yeah.
So over a few beers, as the best ideas often come about, we put together a plan as to how to monetize this and how to take it to a bigger audience and a bigger market. We launched that back in April 2016 with no funding. I still had day jobs and very quickly got traction, and that allowed us to get started.
So I wanted to dig deeper into the whole open source movement that you guys are a part of and how that's the foundation of Tyke. Could you explain a little bit more of that?
Yeah, sure. And that's probably central to a lot of the discussion about being a remote first business and the culture we have here. You know, I described the genesis of the business, and that was from a side project. Mm-hmm. It was hacking and learning and finding something that others found useful. And the only way we found that others found it useful was releasing it as open source and letting people run with it and use it. For us, it was the community is finding this useful. The community is developing it. The community themselves are the users of the software are saying to us, these are the features we need. This is what we want to do. And even then coming to us and saying, can we actually get services from you? Can we buy more from you? Can you do this at scale? So that was very much the genesis of it. And we ran with that in a way that allowed us to compete against really large organizations that we wouldn't have been able to do as a proprietary startup. We didn't want to start to look at raising funding, which would then necessarily change the objectives and the KPIs mm-hmm. you're working to. Mm-hmm. If you're working to what the community is asking for, what the users are asking for, it kind of keeps you honest about what's useful. It makes sure that you are quickly iterating and finding, you know, that phrase of product market fit.
So I noticed you mumbled product market fit. Is that because... What are your thoughts on that?
It's one of those phrases that is focused on a lot by investors because you're looking at how quickly can you achieve a kind of hockey stick growth mm-hmm. curve? How quickly can you get on a trajectory towards a unicorn? And that's not always the outcome for an organization or a startup. If that's what you're looking for, frankly, there's go and join a hedge fund, go and join a financial institution mm-hmm. if your objective is that financial return.
As you guys were growing and taking feedback from your users and the community, what kind of got you started in growing your team remotely?
The fact we came from an open source project meant that feedback and users were everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, we hadn't had to go out on the road and knock on doors. As soon as you're doing that, you're limiting your geographic reach. You looked for the problems we solve and we pop up in Google. It didn't matter whether you're in Seoul, Korea, or whether you're in Singapore or you're on West Coast US, we'd be there. One of the hurdles we had to overcome is my co-founder and his wife had just had a baby and were moving to Auckland in New Zealand. And we discussed it and said, well, that shouldn't stop us running a business. But when we hired our first engineer, it came out of the open source community. We were looking for someone who could add some functions and features. We saw someone had made some really high quality contributions, had some really good ideas on GitHub.
Oh, so they were already showing their work
Exactly. They'd actually contributed to our project. They were using it for, I think, a German airline at the time.
Oh, okay.
And as a contractor. And we spoke to them and thought, okay, well, we could probably hire someone in Germany. But it turned out he was based in Paraguay. As we continued to hire, we realized if we're looking for objectively the best person to provide code, to provide marketing, to provide operational support, how important is location? So why restrict the business when your users are globally distributed?
Right. So basically, when you guys started, that's when you guys set the example for yourselves and mm-hmm. realized it from day one, from the get-go.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know of your onboarding processes in all the different countries.
Mm-hmm. So that's changing. It's changing over time. When it was obviously two or three of us, it was simple. Everyone logged onto Zoom and said, hey, newbie, welcome to the team. And it was a fairly simple process. As we've grown, I mean, we're 70, 75 people now. We've had to put in place some processes to make sure that the logistics of making that happen works. We started by ensuring that when someone joins on the first day that they have a buddy, and that buddy can be anyone who is either geographically remote or close by, doesn't really matter, and potentially not even in the same part of the business. It might, if you're an engineer joining, it might not be an engineer who your buddy is. And then alongside that, everything we do at Tyke operate asynchronously and to operate collaboratively and remotely. Mm-hmm. So now that we're at a scale 70 plus, we've actually hired in people to maintain and administer that because it's such an important part of building a remote business mm-hmm. is finding the right people and bringing them into the business. It's not something that you can just add on as a process. It has to be at the foundation of how the team builds.
Yeah. We do that as well. I mean, when I joined my company, I was given the Trello board onboarding process. Mm-hmm. We also had a couple books to read as well. Mm-hmm. But that was my first time doing like that kind of onboarding. On top of having to scale your onboarding processes just due to the nature of the company right now. What other operations have you had to scale up?
Scaling a remote business is a tricky one.
Oh.
it brings so many benefits and so many advantages. And when it's running smoothly, I think it's a real competitive advantage. However, you have to be alert constantly to the changing nature of the organization. So we've started to put in more formal internal communications in a way that having a regular town hall broadcast, having regular updates from different teams in text form for people to read as well. The other thing we found is really important is consideration of inclusivity around time zone and geography. So as you scale the team out, it's inevitable that there will become certain hubs where there are more than one person. And there's a real danger that as you bring people into the business, the understanding is to get something done, I need to have a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's the case, but those meetings can be exclusionary. And that's a dangerous precedent to set. So we pushed very hard against that and tried to advocate for defaulting to using Zoom as the default state for a meeting. Even if you can have it all in one place, then make sure there is an invite for others to join remotely. And the other side is around communication, the written word versus a voice. And that requires a lot of discipline around decisions that are taken and being put into an asynchronous format.
So also making your brainstorms and your communications more asynchronous, would you say that helps with making your employees more autonomous?
Absolutely. One of the things that discipline does is it enforces a degree of inclusivity. So by enforcing asynchronous contributions, it means anyone can contribute. Anyone can look at that proposal and say, hang on a minute, I've got an idea. I can add a question. I can add a query. You make sure that they can contribute. If you look at it purely as a way of avoiding having to get office rent or as a way of hiring for different pay scales, then absolutely missing the biggest advantage of this, which is spending time, effort, and focus on how do you communicate, how do you make decisions, how do you bring the best people in to contribute to that.
I don't know if you get this question a lot, but I'm wondering, how else do you guys make sure that the remote client management is going well?
We're very proud of the way that we do work with our customers. And that's a result of, from a very small scale, having people available 24/7, 365. But partly it's our focus on a kind of radical responsibility for team members. One of the big concerns of having a remote business is that, is it going to take 24 hours additional to get a decision made? Because I've just woken up, my line manager was in a prior time zone, so I'll raise a question, I won't get it until I wake up the next day because they won't get it until they wake up. That's a real concern. So one of the things as a remote business is ensuring people understand the rules of engagement so that they can respond to a customer and feel confident that they have your full support to just go ahead and do what needs to be done. We want to push that responsibility down to people wherever they are, but that really does need clear rules of engagement and clear objectives for everyone.
Made from the top.
From the top, clear communication from the top, clear support that will be there. We're getting into the world of OKRs as we scale so that you can clearly define those and bring some transparency to them. Those specific objectives are being set by the teams themselves and being ratified by a leadership team. But the real key thing for us is making sure people have the comfort and knowledge and confidence that if they go ahead and do this, there isn't going to be a court martial afterwards.
Right.
You know, hey, that was the rules of engagement. That was the objective. It went well. It went badly. Doesn't matter. I think that's where we outperform others who don't have that kind of credo, who have a much more formal command and control response, because a client problem or an internal problem just gets passed up and down the line and nothing gets done until it's gone all the way up, until someone says, okay, I'll take responsibility. And it passes all the way back down the line.
When you said that, pass it all the way up and pass it all the way down, I just immediately thought about like my past experiences where we may be sitting there waiting for some sort of approval for hours when we know like it would probably be approved. Mm-hmm. So, but you still have to wait.
And that waiting is not driven, you know, no organization would mandate that. It comes almost out of a dysfunction and a fear that cause a court martial.
Something to the client. Client's going to like leave or something. But yeah, no. I totally understand that. It's kind of like flashbacks.
This, without it sounding too kind of messianic about this, is something really important. Mm-hmm. It is central to being remote, because I heard someone define culture about how decisions get made when the boss is not in the room. Okay, so the culture of the business is what's going on when the person who normally is in charge isn't there. If you dig into that as a remote business, that's, well, what happens every day? Because, mm-hmm. In a traditional office-based setting, then you've got a manager sat there who's looking over the desk and saying, oh, they're in at 9 a.m., they're in at 9 a.m., they're not in at 9 a.m., that's not so good.
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the first level of control that's applied, presenteeism. Next level of control is passing things up and down. Am I seeing, can I see what's over your shoulder? What are you doing? What are you working on at the moment? Okay, that's interesting. Okay, maybe you should go this way. Maybe you should go that way. Essentially being present in that way, setting the expectation that if you have a question, you throw it up the line and ask. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't scale remotely. You can't do that because we're not in the room. We don't monitor. We go to the point even of having unlimited paid annual leave, complete flexible working hours. And we ask people to organize that time, their working day, organize their working week and months and their annual vacations with their colleagues direct.
Yeah.
And that requires a degree of trust and responsibility. That is so important. And I think that's why larger organizations still have this thing of, we will allow you to work from home one day a week. It's that fear that, we can't control you. We don't trust you.
Like when people are given more flexibility and more, I guess, autonomy, you just take responsibility of it. And there are ways to center that a little more. Like for us, when we want to take vacation or whatever, we have a Slack channel and mm-hmm. we just write, I'm going to be taking my vacation on these days. And if there's anything, let me know. And usually it's fine.
The issue, of course, you have to consider is that not everybody treasures that level of autonomy and not everybody treasures that level of responsibility. At different stages in your career, different personality types, some people prefer, frankly, to have less of the responsibility and focus more on the craft. And so that is something that we try to interview for and assess for when we're bringing people into the team is, will you thrive in this or will you actually find it quite difficult? Will you find it quite uncomfortable to have to decide which of these things to work on?
You having, been in this company for over 5 years now, yeah, doing the math. Do you have any advice or for people who are trying to potentially start the same thing that you guys are embarking on right now? Things that you wish somebody had told you while you were in the position?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we got right just by necessity and circumstances, we were remote ourselves as founders. Mm-hmm. I think if the founders are not operating remote, but everyone else is, then that is not going to work and is not going to scale because you end up with a two-tier system where there's the office where the decisions get made and then there's everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that isn't healthy. The fact that our CEO and the chap who wrote the software from the very first and saw the opportunity is in Auckland and is many, many hours remote from any of his colleagues really sets the agenda. If you yourself don't see the benefit of being remote and wouldn't operate remote, I would consider why you would want everyone else to. So that'd be my starting point. Next one, I think we were too slow probably to formalize the asynchronous documentation, asynchronous decision making. And mm-hmm. I think it wasn't until it became too chaotic and too problematic with too many people shouting just around that we instituted it. And I would say that actually if you know you're going down this path, then right away figure out how do we allow people to contribute and how do we set expectations around the pace of those decisions and the communication of those decisions? Because that's a real point of friction otherwise. Mm-hmm. I think the third one, and if anyone has an answer to it, I'd love to hear it because it's still a problem for us, is we work 24/7, 365, or the company does, because people are in every time zone. And we mm-hmm. have some very motivated, very committed people who are doing really great things within the business. And it's really difficult to find a way to contribute enthusiastically when you want to contribute, but also to lock out of that and shut off and get your own time. It's tempting to think, that discussion, that was still going on. I wonder if anyone's picked that up over in Singapore. I'm just going to log on and look on Slack now. And it's 9 at night or it's 5 in the morning. And suddenly you realize, hang on, my Slack usage just, the only time it's not on is when I'm asleep. And that's dysfunctional. And we're trying various things, but we still haven't got an answer that is both you are responsible for your own time. You are able to contribute and flex your working hours and work how you want, but also please look after yourself. Yeah. Please turn this off. You should be going out and having fun on a Saturday afternoon and not really worry about what's there.
Yeah.
And that's a really difficult thing to strike, because you want people to enthusiastically contribute. And sometimes people do want to do a stint of really engaging and trying to get something over the line. But you don't want people being notified and alerted 24/7, 365, and feel like there's a constant deluge of noise. And we haven't quite found the answer to that. And we've spoken to many people. We spent time with GitHub. We spent time with smaller companies who are all remote, and spoken to that. And it does seem to be I guess, part of modern life is the information overload, the always on, the fact you've got a device in your pocket. And we're not quite ready to go the other way, that the French government way of mandating turning off emails at weekends and evenings, which doesn't work.
I did not know
for us.
They did that.
there is a right to turn your work communications off, and you can be prosecuted for bending that. However, and that's great if you're all located in Paris and Lyon, but if your colleagues are in Singapore, they want to send an email. So how do you reconcile that? And answers on a postcard to us, please, if you have them.
You heard it here first, listeners. Do you find yourself not being able to shut off as well?
Yes, to a degree. I mean, I think that's probably endemic for all founders, because, you know, you're constantly worried that, you know, is everything going okay? Am I doing enough? Is the team okay? So you're constantly checking in on things and second guessing. But I do find that there are projects, there are programs of work, there are teams doing things that I want to be involved in, and they are in every time zone.
Right.
I want to catch up with them. And one of the things we do as founders is we do try to travel infrequently, but ensure that we do spend time in each of those regions so that we are in the same time zone as, you know, people at the different times of the year. But yeah, it really is difficult. I find it's easier at weekends, but during the week, at what point do I disengage?
It's a double-edged sword of having your globally distributed team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I talked to somebody who also a COO of a company, and he was trying to do that as well. He was talking about enforcing like no emails and Slack on the weekends. And it was just like a starting point, because he was like, I found out that, you know, if you don't say it in a more strict tone, people will just kind of push it away. Mm-hmm. But he was trying to figure out a way to shut off more and make sure people are spending time with their family and friends. Mm-hmm. And because like eventually it's going to lead to some kind of burnout. There's no clear solution just because of everybody's working mm-hmm. style and how they are as a person. And
one thing that we do know is that people find it easier to have a strict rule of abstinence rather than self-regulation and moderation. It's mm-hmm. it's easy to say, turn it off and then turn it on at this time, and that's the rule, versus, well, just look after yourself, don't look into everything. But it is that the time zone is the issue, because you want the freedom to flex. And actually some of our team really prize that. They like the ability that they can get up early in the morning, work with the team in a different region, shut off for a few hours, go and do something else, go to the gym, or, you know, go and hang out with the family, and then maybe pick something else up in the afternoon mm-hmm. and just adjust their day around it. And so you can't mandate the shutting emails off at those times for that. So yeah, autonomy and responsibility versus command and control, those two things don't sit comfortably with an always on communication stream.
Mm-hmm. I think the person that I was speaking with, he didn't really have the time zone thing either. Mm-hmm. So with his team being in different places in Europe, but not anywhere else, mm-hmm.
He should sign up to the French government approach. Yeah, that's very, very command and control.
Yeah. And to wrap it all up, so first of all, thank you so much for speaking with me for over an hour now on another episode of the Remoter podcast. But to wrap it up, I want to know if you think that Tyke's story, mission, values, etc., will encourage other people or listeners, other companies to explore the world of remote.
Yeah, I would hope so. I would think that the key things for us are that we didn't need to go out and impress VCs to get started. We didn't need to go out and seek funding to build a sizable team who were competing with really big names in tech. We didn't need to be hiring people in one location. In fact, we got an advantage from just throwing the doors and the hiring open to anyone, anywhere. And importantly, not only that starting point, not only does it allow us to get started in a way that would have been prohibitive if we'd all been in one location, but I'm a big believer that the quality of what we do and the engagement of what we do and the fact that our team are so motivated and have such strong affinity with what we're doing because of how we work that we can outcompete those other firms. So anyone who's looking at an idea or something they want to get started and feels that they have these blockers of, but I need money for rent, I need money for the office space, I need money to bring these people in, I've got to go and pitch to these people, and frankly, I'm going to come up to a kind of a, you know, a Donald Trump style character who's going to shout me down. It's kind of that those shouldn't be blockers. There are other ways of doing it, and remote is a key part of it if you can make that work.
So thank you very much for joining us today. I do hope that the message resonates with people. I mean, that's the whole point of the entire series, but I do hope at least it can open one person's eyes to the benefits and also the hardships that you have to go through when deciding on whether or not to go remote or start your company remote. Thank you so much.
That's been great. Thanks. Enjoy talking to you.
Remoter Podcast Season 2 is recorded, produced, and edited by Josephine C. It is mixed and mastered by Steven Stepanek and Vanessa Monroy. Graphics and visuals by Valentina Castillo. The music track used is Skip by Old Boy from Soundstripe. Follow and subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Don't forget, we've recently made our Founding and Growing Remotely online course completely accessible and listed on our site. Visit us at remoter.com, that's remoter.com, for more relevant content. Follow us on social media at Remoter Project to stay up to date with our latest initiatives and collaborations with other remote first companies around the world. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about each episode, so feel free to tag us on socials anytime. And remember, we're here to make work fulfilling, so what part will you play in shaping the future of work?